Hello, everyone. We're back with another Bald Move Prestige podcast. This time we're talking about 2019's Marriage Story, written and directed by Noah Baumbach, who, I'm going to be honest, I've not seen any of the stuff that he's been a director of other than this. Mm-hmm. He got Oscar nominated, of course, for this and also The Squid and the Whale. You might know him from Margo at the Wedding, Francis Ha, While We Were Young, Mistress America, or the Meyerowitz stories.
Nope.
I don't. However, he has written two films that I really like, mm-hmm. The Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou and Fantastic Mr. Fox. So,
yeah, two of my like him as a writer. Favorite Wes Anderson movies.
Yeah. It stars Scarlett Johansson, of course, Black Widow. We just saw her last week. Adam Driver, Kylo Ren, Laura Dern, also from Star Wars and Jurassic Park. Alan Alda of MASH fame. He also got an Oscar nom for his work in The Aviator. Recently saw him in Horace and Pete. Ray Liotta of Goodfellas fame. Julie Haggerty, which I know as the love interest in Airplane, the movie, and Airplane 2, the sequel.
Yeah, yeah.
Merritt Weaver, who you will know from The Walking Dead, her run on HBO's Run and Godless. Also, she was a star on Nurse Jackie. Wallace Shawn, inconceivable that he's in this movie. And finally, Robert Smigel. Great director, actor, best actor,
yeah,
for me to poop on, because he's also the puppeteer behind Tripe the Comic Insult Dog.
Yeah,
Jim, Marriage Story.
Uh-huh.
It's a movie about a divorce, about the end of a marriage.
It is, yeah. It's ironically named, I feel. I don't know. It tells a story of their marriage also. Through the lens of the divorce. I think it's appropriately named also.
Which is not a bad time to get the temperature of a relationship, you know, when it's ending. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, what was this thing anyway?
Yeah, you can only judge something like this in hindsight. And that's the part of it that I really like. There's a way that he sort of captures the messiness of relationships in general, right? This one happens to be about a husband and a wife, and that's maybe like one of the more intense relationships you can have, especially when a child is involved. Mm-hmm. And but I feel like this applies to just people interacting and time passing. There's a way that he like captures something about life, something about like, I am this person when this thing starts, and I will inevitably become a different person. But even if I stay the same person and try really hard to do that, that might dissatisfy me or the people around me in some other way, right? It's like, it's a very messy thing that he manages to get his arms around in some kind of way. And to me, told a very interesting, very entertaining, compelling story about two people who maybe have blind spots about how they've treated each other, but also have realized that they wanted different things for their life, and that if they're going to get those things in the future, they can't be together.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is very relatable, especially for as like bougie as it all is. Like, these are very wealthy people jetting from New York to LA. One's getting a MacArthur grant for being a genius. The other's essentially a teen star who is, you know, getting hired to this prestigious science fiction thing. Like, this is, it's hard to relate from that kind of perspective. But as far as a breakup yeah. involving children, the, you know, he said, she said, the framing of narrative, trying to come up with the truth that will work for you post-divorce that you can learn something from. I think this is really an interesting story, and I think it's a good cautionary tale for young men, not in the like, oh, you got to watch how you get married or they'll suck you dry and you'll be left with nothing. They'll take your kids as sons of those fucking bitches, but how you can kind of go along with a societal narrative and think that you're both on the same team because the team is essentially you. You're the star player and you're the head coach and you're the you know, talent, you're everything, and the other person just kind of going along for the ride, and after 10 years they wake up and like, where the fuck am I? Do I want to be here?
Yeah.
And you've let yourself get so consumed with being the star of your thing that your wife and maybe your children and friends have been left behind, and suddenly you're like, you don't want to lose these things that have been important theoretically, but like, what the fuck? are you going to prove to the court that you're, you know, involved with the kid's life when you've missed X amount of practices and X amount of school teachers? And you know, like, I thought that was really interesting how a guy's whole life narrative falls apart with like a couple of line of basic questions about, you know, and it could have been a lot of things like, when's the last time he's been to the doctor? What's his doctor's name? You know, there's like, he just completely caught out not participating in the things that are suddenly the most important thing in his life. But I think that's something that, whether you're a divorced dad or you're a dad in a happy marriage, it's stuff you got to think about, you know, like, what are you investing in? What is the most important thing in your life? What if you had to prove that, you know, is your life backing that up? I thought that stuff is the stuff I was thinking about anyway, too.
Yeah. It's interesting because, like, you know, you and I are both married. I've only been married for less than 2 years, so it's not like I'm at this kind of stage with something, even potentially, right?
And I've been married 2 times. So,
okay.
Twosies.
Yeah, you're the Alan Alda here. Are you going to go start your own attorney's office to do a divorce stuff? Is that going to happen?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I hope not. But
there's still a lot of stuff that's identifiable. And I think it doesn't, like, that's why I say it doesn't necessarily have to be the marriage, right? It's, or the kids or anything like that. It's just like there's something human in this movie where time passes, things change. If you take your eye off of your life for a while or one aspect of it, you might end up regretting that. But like, whose fault is that? You know, I ended up identifying a lot with Scarlett Johansson's character, Nicole, because that monologue she has in Laura Dern's office in that first in Nora's office in that first meeting between them, where she's just like, I spent, you know, the last 10 years like not living my life, but living life for this, you know, this guy who was doing, you know, whatever he wanted to do. And I was like supporting that. And it's something that she definitely chose, right? I mean, it's not like she was coerced into that or she didn't want to have a kid or anything like that. Like all those decisions she made, but she missed out on other things because of them, right? And that applies to everybody. You're going to have to take a path in your life. And if you find 10 years down the line that maybe you missed out on some things, well, guess what? That's life, right? So that was the thing that really like resonated to me.
Yeah, that's why I was saying, like, because I was surprised when I started reading people's thoughts about this, like, how many people were very, especially when you moved from the critics and you started going to Reddit, like, how many people had very strong opinions about, like, who was the bad guy and who was the good guy?
When I have an opinion, yeah, but not strong, super strong.
I think that, and it's something that a therapist told me is like, I've never seen rarer is the relationship that I've seen that the imbalance in like dynamics is more than 55-45.
Gotcha.
You know, it's rarely that someone is just
blow
like,
up or what?
Yeah, they probably don't see that's because I actually asked him, I was like, do you actually, and he was like, well, I was like, you know, maybe if we're talking about people that actually come to my, you know, people that are trying to salvage something,
right.
So you're self-selecting a sample, but like, yeah, the fact that like, it's usually, and like you said, it didn't feel like she was coerced or even bullied or anything, but it's more of just like people going along and both not testing the assumptions. And one of the assumptions was, you know, just kind of the default, and nobody really examined that. And that stuff is, like I said, the thing that's really dangerous. And I think it's the people should think about, like, when you're watching this and if stuff is feeling uncomfortable or feeling like it's hitting close to home, well, I mean, you can always start doing better, you know, like start listening more, start asserting yourself. Cause that's the other thing. I kept on thinking, in the last half of this, man, at 5 years ago, one of the other had, and it probably had to have been Scarlett because, you know, Adam was super happy with this relationship, Charlie. It probably have to be, if she'd like put her foot down and be like, I'm just feeling like a shell of myself. Like, I feel like life is missing me by, and we're always doing your things. And they before the brinksmanship started, because I think he was open to the idea of like, well, we talk about a lot of things, getting a sectional couch, vacationing in England, moving to like, and she's like, well, why is it the stuff that is for your job are the decisions we've made, the things that I have to give up are, you know, like it doesn't feel like it's a 50-50. Like, well, you gave up that thing so I could have this thing. It's just me giving yeah, yeah. because you that I love this and I'm happy. And it's I think that that's the shame of it. Like if she could have been more assertive 5 years ago, if he had been a little bit more curious and, you know, listened to her 5 years ago,
a little less self-absorbed. Yeah, he's definitely selfish in this movie.
But. Yeah. And, you know, the other thing, it's like, because I saw a lot of defensive to Charlie, it's like, well, you know, he's this genius playwright. That's a super important job. It takes up a lot of your attention. What are you supposed to do? I think that's what I've always been thinking when I watch these things, because that's always like, you know, when you see the secret agent, he's the only one that can catch bin Laden, but his home life is suffering. Uh-huh. Or the artist that's the voice of a generation, but they can't keep a relationship. I sometimes think that like you can't really do both when one of the yeah. things sucks up that much of your time. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think you can be Jesus Christ of Nazarene and a good dad. Jesus yeah. never married or had children, according to most tellings. Maybe there's something to that. Like if you want to be the world's greatest dad, you're probably not going to be a hard charging Hollywood director. Yeah, or if exactly you are, right. there's going to be a lot of sacrifices made that maybe the child will feel a little certain way about when they grow up. Mm-hmm. And what are you going to do? Scream them down that their feelings aren't valid? Like that's the thing. It's like I think that some of this narrative, like you can have it all. I think it's false.
It is. I think this movie dissects that and says as much, you know, this is a choice that you have to make. And that's like that's where their relationship comes to a head, right? When she has finally made a choice between like, you know, having his life or having a life of her own as well.
Right.
And she finds out that I think that life is incompatible with his life. And so what do you yeah. do? That's like the core tension of this movie, right? Is that they are bound together by this kid. And their lives have diverged such that she wants her own life, rightfully so. But also, uh-huh. he's not going to give up the life that he's got. So what the fuck do they do, right? This is the only right. option here. And it's not a great option. There are no good options. And I think right. that's an important lesson to learn in life, is that there aren't always perfect options. You can't solve every problem. You can sort of learn to live with it, right? Live with the choices you make and make the best choices you can and when you make them. And that's like 90% of what I appreciated about this movie is that. And the other 10% are the incredible performances.
Yeah, let's talk about that before we get too much into thematic weeds, because there's the God knows it'll be a whole podcast for the hat. That's where I knew nothing about this. I didn't even know it was yeah. about a divorce. I figured it was about a troubled relationship because I've seen the meme of Adam pounding the wall so hard he pushes a hole through it.
Oh, I hadn't seen anything. Nothing.
I've seen the there's another meme of Scarlett Johansson with the brave crying smiling face that sometimes get used for reaction shots. But like, I didn't know anything other than that these were like all time great performances from the leads, and it fucking delivers. Like, yeah. I know Adam Driver can act in difficult stuff. Like, that was what they brought him on to do for like Girls. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I haven't really seen, of course, I haven't seen a lot of his art house shit, but I haven't seen anything that he's done that's kind of like gone to that range. But holy shit, he does a lot of fucking emoting in this here film.
He does. And he does some emoting. He does some singing. He does just some yeah. really like great, fun, nice guy kind of stuff. He's yeah. effortlessly charming at times. It's mm-hmm. the whole range, man. He nails it. And same with Scarlett. They're
and you
incredible.
Can see how you can also see how he's a good dad, but also how he's a bad dad, you know, like how he can uh-huh. be a bad dad. There's some funny shit in here involving some really high stakes social situations, like meetings with Child Protective Services, where they're essentially asking you, are you a good dad? And the yeah. kid says, show them the thing you do with the knife, daddy. Like, there's some really effective tension based comedy that he, because I think Adam Driver's hilarious. If you've seen any of his shit on Saturday Night Live, him and Scarlett Johansson both are game for anything.
Yeah.
And they're both allowed to be funny in the limits of this script, because, you know, some things that happen during a divorce are hilarious. But yeah, it's been a real long time since I've seen Scarlett Johansson in something like this good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't tend to watch a lot of her stuff that is like this. I know she's got a few others, but this is like head and shoulders above anything I've seen her do emotionally and from an acting perspective. And yeah, she's, I mean, Jesus Christ, it's like, how charismatic and charming can one person be when she's on the screen? And then how devastated can one person look at the same time, right? It's like, yeah, she's flashing a million watt smile and also tears streaming down her face, and just like, you feel the pull, you feel the tension just in her expression, in her body language, and everything.
Yeah, how tall do you think Scarlett Johansson is? Like 5'4", probably?
She's got to be. There was one scene where she walks out and she's got a crowd around her talking to her, like walk and talk. And I couldn't help but notice like how short she is compared to everyone else.
Yeah, because like, you know, you see her in action roles. I think they, you know, we've talked about this in the Badass series. They tend to inflate those numbers a bit. But I think she's fairly short by American female standards. And Adam Driver is very tall. Yeah. I think he's legitimately like 6'4", 6'5". And one of the things I thought effective, and the movie doesn't even really call attention to this, it's something there if you're looking, is like when things got angry between them, like you could easily see how he's a scary individual, because he like literally hulks over her, and he's punching holes in the walls and screaming in her face. And I think it would be more noticeable if she was not as a fierce a character herself, because she's like fucking holding her frame like a champ over there. But like, they do a lot of that stuff as like, you know, no one to describe him as like a scary or like that kind of a bad abusive guy.
No,
but it's that performance, the physicality of the performance is there to kind of underline, like, maybe if we took another step, like another surmise past what these guys are willing to do at this point in their divorce, you could see where, you know, like, why did she stay silent for 10 years? Because she loves them, obviously. She doesn't want to break up their family. But maybe she's also a little afraid of what this guy might do, this weird auteur guy that's, you know, this physical hulking beast might do. And it's not in the script. There's nothing. That's just stuff that I just noticed, like the body, like Jesus Christ, how would I feel if Shaquille O'Neal had just punched a hole in my wall and was screaming in my face like this over a business deal?
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, I don't feel like a lot of times we think about that like male female dynamic when you're talking about a 10 year relationship type of business deal where there's kids involved. That shit could be scary. And this movie's so good. It does that without even really draw. There's no scene of like, you know, her talking to her mom's like, you know, Charlie really scared me and I was really afraid, but you know, I had like, it's just there. It's just part of the film.
I liked that. I wasn't thinking about that in that scene. And I kind of liked that I wasn't, because it let me get to the emotional core of that scene more than a scary core. Right. It let me understand why these people are no longer compatible, and what, you know, it let me understand like the resentment that had been building over a 10-year relationship that nobody intended, right? And nobody even like really would have admitted that there was resentment there until that moment, until that flashpoint. And the movie like kept me comfortable enough in the fact that this wasn't going to get violent. Like, I couldn't even explain why I felt that way, but maybe it's just because the relationship they had shown up to that point was better than that. You know, it wasn't that type of fire to this relationship. And so when I'm in that scene, I'm not thinking, shit, he punched a hole in the wall, he's coming after her next. I'm thinking, this man is an emotional wreck right now, you know? And he's channeling that into violence against this wall because he's not going to strike her or something like that.
Right. But I do think that's there, whether it's appreciated or not.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing is not, it's just, I wasn't thinking
like
it.
What you're saying about that scene is that, you're right. Especially since like one of the themes in the movie is up till that point, like Adam Driver's like, I thought we were going to leave the lawyers out of this. Like the lawyers are the ones causing all his problems. Well, when you leave, And the scene that preceded that was the lawyers just viciously going at each other's narrative of who built whose career from what, and who was the teen that showed her tits, and who was the absentee father who, you know, has blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh my God, look at these litigators. They're just making everything, like, if there's any bad guy in this movie, it's the fucking lawyers. But it's not nearly as vicious as when the lawyers aren't there and they go not to just the narrative, yeah, but to the feelings and thoughts and how they viewed each other. And it's probably not like I think you're also supposed to get the idea that a lot of those things, as soon as they're said, they wish they could unsay them.
Yep. And they don't totally 100% mean them, right? Some of it is just meant to hurt in that moment.
But it's interesting because, like, I'm left because, like, the lawyers are kind of the worst. And I got, like, my scores for them. But, like, I'm left with what I was really thinking about this, like, what would have been better if the lawyers don't get involved? And I feel like there's two ways this thing ends if the lawyers don't get involved. Mm-hmm. And one is they both have these talks where, you know, he fights her a little bit too hard on something and she starts thinking, like, what does that mean? He feels, and they, it just devolves into this argument they already have. And then the lawyers get involved. Or he just, like, well, you know, Nicole, we live in New York and our son goes to New York schools and he's going to stay in New York. And I can't leave. I got this MacArthur grant and, you know, you're going to have to make sacrifices and you don't want any of my MacArthur grant because, you know, you don't want anything you haven't earned. And he just manages her through a divorce that's, like, very amicable and but he gets everything.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It's interesting because he didn't want everything, right? Like, there was never any talk of that. Now, the MacArthur stuff comes up somewhere in the middle of it, and her acting career comes up somewhere in the middle of it. And I feel like those things are sort of offsetting things. But, you know, the thing that, like, I mark as selfishness is both he couldn't see that she was unhappy, unfulfilled in that relationship. And also, he didn't see how big of a part she was in the MacArthur grant, right? Like, while she was taking care of that kid, because he was clearly, like, most of the time he was off doing his director stuff and he'd come home and read to the child, stuff like that. She was supporting the household, right? In ways that he wasn't, not in non-financial ways. And so, like, he wasn't giving her enough credit for that. And that MacArthur grant is partially because of that. Because he had the freedom to go out and be the auteur Broadway director that he wanted to be.
Yeah, but when I said that he gets everything, what I meant is, like, if they split, like, their possessions 50-50 amicably, but he gets to stay in New York and she has to stay in New York and the son stays in New York.
Oh, yeah.
He essentially still gets everything.
He gets her life. Like, that's insane. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, like, I can see that 10 years down the line, he would probably be, you know, like, ah, come on, you can take him because I've got this thing event. And he becomes less and less of a father. And then he's wondering when his kid's in college, why he never called. Like, I guess I'm saying is, like, I think it's not invalid for a lawyer to take a woman that comes to them and says, like, look, I just want this to end peacefully. You know, and I just, you know, I'm not happy, but I want to, and I don't want it to be vindictive to Kendall. Like, well, let's figure out what you actually want, because if you start making decisions and give things up right now, then, and that's something that, like, Adam Driver's character, Charlie, didn't understand.
Yeah.
When he was like, oh, well, okay. Yeah. Let him go out to school there. And like he was giving into the narrative that this kid is not a New Yorker. I thought that stuff was pretty interesting. So, like, I guess I'm saying, like, I don't know that Laura Dern's character was evil. She's more aggressive than I would like in a family law attorney. But, well, like,
legal,
I think if she had
the thing, they're evil.
Right. Right. Yeah. Like, but if she wasn't there to ask her what she wanted, I don't know that Scarlett Johansson would have figured that out until 3 or 4 years. And she's still stuck in New York. And, you know,
and their divorce is finalized and she didn't get the things that she wanted.
She's had to give up her kid, or no, she's going to have to continue making sacrifices because she loves the kid so much. Like, she just, so.
And that's why I like that scene so much when she first meets Laura Dern in her office and she just says, look, I'm not living my life. I'm living this dude's life.
Right.
That was powerful. And that was a moment for her, right? Too, a turning moment, because she wasn't saying that in the therapist's office when they were writing the letters at the beginning.
Right. Why do you think that she didn't want to exchange? Because I thought that was a great way to start the film. A good way for us to see them at their best. And, like, I was making notes about, like, what they liked about each other and what they didn't like. And I thought it was going to tell a story about how the things that they like, you start taking for granted, and the things that they that they don't do to get on your nerves becomes more and more inflamed. And but it none of that stuff seemed to be an impact into the story. But I did wonder, like, why is it that Scarlett Johansson was so resistant about sharing that stuff? Because she didn't want to get notes, maybe?
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I was wondering if there's, like, something, like, subconsciously where she knows that this guy could persuade her out of the thing, doing what's best for herself and her son. That, like, if she starts thinking about the old times and how great it, like, you know, the other smaller voice that she can barely hear at the quietest moments is saying, I'm stuck, I'm drowning, I'm trapped.
Yeah.
That will, like, get pushed down.
Yeah, that could be it.
I wasn't sure, because it seemed like that is incongruent with the rest of her character, where she was kind of, like, game to do anything. And
it makes a certain amount of sense. Like, you have to take this journey that they take over the course of this movie, and only then can you hear that letter read aloud, right, and be okay with that relationship still ending, not let it persuade you into extending
your misery. Narratively, it's a hell of a bookend, because it completed like three different arcs, like film long arcs with a single scene. Mm-hmm. That was a pretty good punch. So yeah, I guess that justifies it right there.
Yeah, I should have seen it coming. When he's teaching the kid to read, it's like,
right?
Oh, yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Of course, there's a letter. Yeah.
God, it came back. It came back together so beautifully.
It does.
Yeah.
Here's what's new in premium content for our club members.
Executive producers get to exercise their voting fingers again this week with another prestige movie poll. This week's nominees are Mystic River, The Last Samurai, and Secondhand Lions. Take your pick and seal our fate.
This Monday on the Premium feed, we open up the books and deliver a State of the Empire podcast, talking about the current condition of Bald Move and our plans for this year.
This Friday, it's Lunch 420, which, given last weekend, seems like a tragic missed opportunity. Ah, well. Lunch will be served piping hot at 1 p.m. Eastern. Come join live or warm up some leftovers when lunch is released in podcast form later that day.
If you want more Bald Move in your life, head over to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get tons of bonus audio and video content, plus ad-free feeds. You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
Before we move on much further, did you notice the sparklies? This is something we talked about in the last season of The Kingdom. Like, there's this digital artifacting that's in the dark areas where it looks like just like random speckles of, like, but they're in different shapes and stuff. Did you notice this or no?
I didn't this time, but I'm watching on like a temporary TV because my real TV is packed up right now. I've seen that on Netflix stuff in the past and it drives me insane.
I don't know. Yeah, because I got this, you know, last year I got a 4K television. Now, like, the stuff that I was like barely picking up on my, it's like, it just like, what the fuck is this? I don't know whether it's like an anti-piracy device, but like I'm a paid, I would get this if this was like a screener copy, right? Oh, well, that's a unique set of dancing pixels that they're going to use to bust me if they find this on the Pirate Bay. Mm-hmm. But like, I'm a fucking paid subscriber to Netflix for a long time, like since they were mailing you DVDs. What the fuck am I? It's really bad for something that's getting Oscar nominations and stuff. Like, I don't like it. I don't know what the hell's going on.
I'm with you. I'm not a fan of their compression techniques. I just wish they'd up the bitrate on their stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. I derailed everything into a highly technical discussion of
that's
this
okay.
Stuff.
There's some, so yeah, I mean, acting is impeccable, and there are some cool cameos as well. Like Wallace Shawn shows up in this movie in a pretty funny role. It's one of the very few moments of comedy, in this movie.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Wallace Shawn was a real treat to, his advice to Charlie, you know,
who
that's the man that speech he gave, like, you know, she's talking about like how she gave up his life. And he's like, well, what about me? I was a 20-year-old genius director. He's essentially kind of like, I could have fucked all these starlets and everybody. And then you'd have gotten Me Too 15 years later with all the casting couch shenanigans you pulled, you fucking prick. But Wallace Shawn is just essentially get it. You're out there. You're young. You're not even 40 yet. You got a MacArthur grant. Go out there and fuck them all, Charlie. Except for he sounded like Wallace Shawn when he's doing it. So I'm like, fuck them all, Charlie. I don't get a good Wallace Shawn.
I don't either. Then Laura Dern is surprisingly good in this. I haven't seen her in much past like Jurassic Park, but she won an Academy Award for this performance, which kind of surprised me because I didn't think it was anything like off the charts special, even though it is very good.
How'd you feel about her? The divorce attorney feel. I mean, I'm actually shocked to hear you say that she got an Academy Award. She won?
Yeah, won it. Best Supporting Actress that year in 2020.
Wow. I guess I'd have to look and see what the competition, but like, yeah, this was a very good performance, like her and Ray Liotta, because that's when he passed on that. I'm like, oh man, because I was kind of looking forward to see like these two attorneys going at each other. And then it comes back later in the plot, and I'm like, well, this is very sad
for sure.
But yeah, no, she just plays a really good, zealous divorce attorney, who I think that's the thing. There's a little bit of like these people, and it's popular to portray them as such. There's a little bit of the like that these people are like arms dealers that are also diplomats.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they're getting like, oh, sure, we'd all like a peaceful resolution, but wouldn't we really like to throw a couple bombs and spend some, you know, like have some fun before we get down to peace? And there's like all this, like you got three different glimpses of lawyers. You've got the Ray Liottas, who I think are the probably worst of the worst. You've got the Laura Derns, who are of that persuasion, but like also, you know, I think she's not going after his MacArthur grant. Like, she also recognizes that there's what's reasonable and not reasonable. Yeah. And you got guys like Alan Alda, which I think are the best of family law lawyers, that it's like, you know, he is steering Charlie in directions that will make him a better dad and his child healthy and well-adjusted. It's not going to make him win necessarily, but it'll minimize his exposure. It'll save the expense that he's going to rack up. And it's honestly, with this set of facts, best for the child, best for the mother, best for the father to do that. And Charlie just doesn't want to hear that because he cannot let his son get taken from New York, because to him it's a binary decision. Well, if he leaves New York, I can't take, my career can't possibly take a back seat. So I just like no longer be his dad. I'll practically not be in his life.
Yeah. That reckoning, right? That choice he's got to make.
Right. But I felt like, how did you think about the lawyers? Did you think the Laura Dern was too much?
No, I mean, in as much as like, she's up against guys like Ray Liotta every day, right? Yeah, she's got to be exactly what she is. And I do think, like, yeah, there was a bit of you know, therapist in her role too, when she's dealing with Nicole in this movie, because yeah, she has to help her figure out what she wants. Like you said, that stuff was all very good. And I didn't ever feel like I hated Laura Dern. I felt like, she's, you know, she's playing the lawyer game, which sucks, but I didn't like hate her, but I also wasn't taken in by her charm as well.
Yeah.
Like when Adam Driver's sitting in this fucking office and Alan Alda's there and they're meeting for some mediation or whatever. Mm-hmm. And she's like, they take a break for lunch and she's over at the coffee and she starts striking up a conversation about how great his work is and how much she loves him. I'm like, dude, tell her to just shut up. Like,
yeah,
just like, look, I don't want to hear, just stop talking right now. You don't have to be mean about it, but this is not the time for that. It was such obvious like manipulation in that moment, mm-hmm. But I also get it, right? It's part of the game. And so like, I never hated her, but I never got comfortable around her either. Unlike Ray Liotta, it's who I hate immediately, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's tough because like there's elements of truth to everything. As a person that's gone through some family law myself, like what Ray Liotta is talking about, like he was essentially giving a lawyer's opinion of like how fucked Charlie looked from a judge's position. And mm-hmm. Honestly, at that point, he was pretty fucked. And to get any kind of like, he's saying, like, if you go reasonable and the other person goes crazy, mm-hmm. then you're going to get a half crazy solution, which is by definition, there's a lot of truth to that.
Yeah.
But the thing is like what Charlie was asking for was crazy to mm-hmm. have Scarlett Johansson give up another 10 years of her life.
Hold her hostage Charlie, in New York.
Because the other thing that made me, I think, why I think it's insane when people say that this was like all stacked in like one or the other's favor is like, if you listen to what Charlie wants, Charlie's much happier in LA than he was in New York. Charlie, their son. Is much happier with his new school, with his new friends, the being close to grandma, his mom's new house. Like, you know, there's this mm-hmm. this constant refrain, which I thought was a joke, the LA people like all the space. You know,
the
but like,
fuck, you're in LA. It's just as oppressive as New York, just in a slightly different way.
That's like, you know, well, Jim, the opposite of crazy is crazy. East Coast is West Coast. Midwest is where all the sane people are at, obviously.
Obviously.
So there's a narrow band of reasonableness from a little bit east of Cincinnati that goes over to like, you know, the Twin Cities, and it's done. But I thought that like there's all the elements of like him saying is like, well, you know, de facto taking your son from you by moving her coast? That's crazy. That's just but like you got to listen to what his son's saying. And if you listen to what mm-hmm. his son's saying, and I also thought there's a lot of sympathy with Charlie because he's like at one point he's like, you know, Alan Alden's talking to him and you can tell that a lot of the reason that he's doing this is I just don't want my son. I can't remember the son's
Henry.
Name. Henry, I don't want Henry to think I didn't fight for him.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I remember because I had this exact same thing. My wife wanted to go back to her, you know, where she grew up because she had the support system there and we had moved to Indianapolis and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, but oh my God, my son, he's 2 years old. That's so far away. I'll only see him ever. And I was talking to my therapist and I said, I just want him to know I fought for him. And the therapist said, this isn't the fight. The fight is the rest of your life being there for him. And like, if you do the next 10 years, right, what you're doing here is just so immaterial. So like, you know, how much time, how much pain, how much money do you want to go through? Those are some things you need to figure out. But as far as like your son and fighting for him, like this isn't the end of the, like if to the extent this is a battle, it's not over today and it won't be over for 30, 40, 50 years when he's looking back over his life and thinking, and I feel like Alan Alda did a good job of articulating that. And also maybe gently pointing out to Charlie that if they're at war, he's showing up late to the battle and ill-equipped and in a bad disposition, you know, like all the times where it's like, well, I want him to have Halloween and he's going to go and the kid's too tired. He already had one trick or treat. Well, you're going to go out because I got a party. We're going to have fun. God damn it. It's like, you can't, you know, do that. And
right.
Then the meeting with the child protective agent was tense because he's blowing it from the whole time. Because essentially what his kid really wants is to stay with his mom and for his dad to move out there too, so he can see him on a regular basis, but mostly he wants to stay with his mom. Mm-hmm. And when she's getting this clear impression, he's got to jump in and, like, you know, scold his son for not doing it. It's just a terrible look, and it ends up with him fake slitting his wrist, really do it. It's, oh God, I enjoyed that a lot.
I couldn't laugh at that scene because I was cringing so hard. It's like,
it's very on that line.
When he cuts himself, I was like, oh no, this is extremely bad and you need to go to the hospital, and the movie does not want you to, but I want you to.
And he's getting, like, when he's, oh, it's fine. He's helping her at the door, and he's smearing blood all over the door frame, and she's trying to duck underneath his dripping arm, and it's just,
It is funny, but also it's so visceral. I don't like that. I don't like it.
Yeah. There's a lot of other things that I think the movie did a good job of showing, like, the problem with Charlie. Not that Charlie's a bad guy, but the fact that, like, you know, the other lawyer had to threaten him a summary judgment before he would actually get the gumption to talk to a lawyer, because it's just taking up so much of his time and he doesn't have time to deal with this right now. And
right. Does he have time for the kid, especially if it's in L.A.? And this is kind of I imagine this is not how all divorces go, right? A lot of divorces are probably not as amicable as this one, probably not as with people who are as understanding or even keeled, level-headed. Like, I felt like both of these people were very, like, generous and understanding with their feelings, and reasonable. And that is not always the case in a divorce. Probably most of the time it ends because there's violent opposition on both sides, and they have tons of resentment and anger, and it blows up all the time. And you're going to have, you know, them going out and hiring lawyers like Laura Dern and Ray Liotta, and they're going to get into the tactics, right? And that was the thing, the other angle of this that the movie shows that I assume is realistic. I know Noah went out and did like a lot of interviewing of lawyer, divorce attorneys and judges and things, like a bunch of people who are intimately familiar with divorces and how they go legally. And that was the thing that really shocked me, is just like the tactics, the underhanded shit that goes on, right? Like sending your client out to 15 different lawyers, the highest power lawyers in LA, to meet with them just to keep them from legally being allowed to represent the other party in this. Mm. So you can essentially bar them from any decent legal representation by just going out and finding a bunch of people in town who are the best lawyers and meeting with them with no intention of ever becoming the client.
Yeah. Although I will say that, like, it's a bit of an arms race, because I guess that's a bit of a dated tactic, because nowadays if I think Scarlett Johansson would be in a lot of trouble in a trial, because she did hack Charlie's shit to read his email and admitted to a felony. And I hear that the judges really don't like you nakedly using it. Like, if you have two or three meetings with lawyers, that's fine. Maybe four or five. But if you meet with 11, or was it 15?
It's 11.
They're going to be like, you know what? Not only are that's a good way for to get the judge for you to pay for your spouse's lawyer, because you're just fucking, you're keeping them from getting effective counsel. And the judge isn't stupid. But like, yeah, there's all kinds of like dirty tricks and shit, and just,
and the stuff about,
you know, the encourage the tit for tat, you know, and the win. Do you want to win, or do you want, like, you know, do you want what's best for everyone and the child, or do you want to win?
Yeah.
And the Ray Liotta is the win. And honestly, Laura Dern, fuck you too for that little bit of the 55-45, because I didn't want him to get to be able to brag to his friends. Fuck you.
Yeah.
Like, that's not what your client wanted. And
she told
that's
you
why
that.
That's why if there's like a wing of the a family law that's the Alan Alda kind of like saint branch, then there and there's the devil branch. Laura Dern has definitely got both her feet on that devil side for that scene alone.
For sure. Yeah.
But she's not Ray Liotta bad.
But she plays that game. Right. And I think like some of the petty stuff with, like, I did never sense that Scarlett Johansson's drinking was a problem in this movie. And yet that's going to be brought out as like, she's an addict and like unfit mother because she has a glass of wine a night, maybe splits a bottle. Right. And when she's meeting with friends, like, that's insane. Right. But that's where they go with these things, trying to just murder their character.
And the other thing that I thought, like you mentioned her being kind of glad handing Charlie at the mediation, when I was in mediation, the opposing lawyer did that to me a little bit, like engaging me in small talk and stuff. And I always thought it's like they're trying to provoke you in front of the mediator. Because if you're the type of guy, be like, right. Fuck you. I'm not paying $250 an hour to hear you fucking kvetch about my job and shit. Yep. Then the mediator's on a cock one eyebrow, make a couple notes. And I think that's what they're doing.
That's why you just say this is not the time for, you know, you want to have dinner with me later. Fine. We'll talk. But this is not the time.
I think that. You just got to take it. You just kind of like I don't know. Maybe I didn't handle that the best. But the whole idea that she's saying all this shit about Ray Liotta and how the system rewards bad behavior and all that kind of stuff and running him down. And then she kisses him on both cheeks and like, oh, mm-hmm. like that's the other trip is when you see the prosecutor and the defense attorney like, oh, how's your kids? Oh, yeah, we should go golfing sometime. And I was like, and then they're going to like get back in private and be like, oh, fuck those people. I guess you want that system, right? You want the adversaries to be able to like, you know, be able to speak to each other to work out things. And it's all kind of a game to them.
It is. Know? Yeah. Like their money and emotional well-being are not at stake here. Right. They're making money on this. So like,
yeah.
Yeah. At the end of the day, they're playing a game with each other.
Right. And there is a little bit of that, like I said, being the arms dealer diplomat where, that's got a factor into this equation, the fact that like, well, the more we get them to fight over petty stuff, and if they're just essentially, it's one thing because like I said, if I think she gave Scarlett Johansson the divorce she wanted at the beginning of the movie, it would have been the divorce that she didn't want. There's a little bit of that, but there's also the like, you know, what if there is nothing to fight over, you know? It's like a car mechanic, they get nothing if they're like, hey, yeah, you, but boy, this, you know, you can change the oil yourself. Don't even really have to come to us for that kind of shit if you don't want to. Versus, like, it's real easy to find a bad battery and, oh, your air filter needs to be cleaned and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Family law, it's tricky. It's really tricky.
Yeah, especially, you know, the mechanics not dealing with potentially the next 10 years of your life and
right.
you know, the past 10 years of your life and the your family and your child, like yeah, it's intense.
Plus it's like if you got kids involved, then it's like, well shit, you can always ask the car, you know, to like, it's tough when the kids are this young, but you know, as they get older you can ask the kid, you know, it's like, oh, do you think your air filter needs to be changed? No, okay, well fuck the air filter.
Yeah,
but yeah, man,
I like this movie a lot. I thought it was honest. It felt real. Yeah, it was good. And I haven't found myself in any of these situations, but I was able to, the movie was very effectively able to make me sympathize with both sides, not hate either. But also have like opinions on them, you know?
Do you think that, because the other thought I had watching this is the legal system, family war or family law. Do you think that like the argument for making it this bad and unpleasant is a lot like the argument for total war? Like, sure, we're bombing factories and population centers, but unless you make war so bad and so ugly that people are willing to do anything to make it stop, it'll cost needless lives. And like, you have to like confront people with like, look, here's the facts, and the judge is going to say this, that. You have to get down to brass tacks, or else it like saves money in the long run because it wards off people from being petty for needlessly. Because you can always say like, well, the judge is going to. Do you think this adversarial thing is actually better because it leads to more well thought out and complete divorces than if you let people waltz in and just be like, ah, oh, fuck it, 50-50. Whatever, you know, it's like, probably, is there good to this being adversarial?
I don't think so, because I don't think lawyers are trained for that sort of things. Lawyers train for the ins and outs of the law. Let therapists deal with that. Let therapists help someone understand what they actually want and how to get it. And then let the lawyers, the attorneys, figure out how to get that within the confines of the law. I don't think like pushing their clients toward like, that's the thing. Like it just so happens that Nicole comes into Nora's office and is like, gets to the bottom of what she actually wants over the course of this thing. But it could have very easily gone another way, right? She could have felt guilty about taking everything in the form of this MacArthur grant and a 95.5% split of the child. And she could have woken up 10 years from now feeling shitty about that because her lawyer pushed her into it, right? I just don't think that's the role of a lawyer.
Cause like the lawyer kind of does everything, you know. You gotta decide what's in the best interest of the client, what the client really wants, and what's the best legal strategy to get that. They're in a tough spot, and you're right. Like, but I don't know if I trust like a panel of five therapists to decide. Okay, well, we've read the details of the family history, and we think this is best.
I'm not suggesting. I'm suggesting like maybe there needs to be some therapy before the legal proceeding of the divorce, like. Get to the heart of what they want and then try and figure out how to make that work for both of them.
Right. I think that things have gotten a lot better in the last 30 years because there is a lot more like guardian ad litem, like, you know, lawyers for the children to kind of evaluate. There are people that are professional caseworkers, social workers that go and interview the families and do the visits. And it's like a hell of a lot better than it was 30, 40 years ago, where it's essentially, you know, and that's something that I thought Laura Dern said is interesting. It's like, you know, we didn't, good fathers were something we invented like 30 years ago. Like before that, it's like, it was the dad's job to be kind of this silent, cold, unapproving breadwinner. And that was just I thought that was a good point. But like, yeah, it used to be that like you got fucked a lot as a dad. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, I think you get fucked as a dad if you are just a really shitty dad, or if you're intimidated by the reputation of the legal system to just give up, or because of the way you've grown up conditioned to like give up like without a fight, you know. But it's pretty easy to get 50-50 custody in almost every state that I'm aware of if you are a dad that's been involved at all, you know. Yeah. But that's the thing. It's like I said, it's like it's a cautionary tale to like, you know, those assumptions. Like if you had to prove that your child was the most important thing in the world today, what evidence could you, you know, could you? And then if you're in a relationship where like you've abdicated all those roles to someone else and that's the understanding, how tight is that understanding? And
right,
boy, what are you doing to reward that other person's loyalty and sacrifice to the altar of you? Because damn, it can go bad if you leave those assumptions unexamined.
Yeah, I mean, that was part of the tension, the push and pull, you know, of like Laura Dern says, the last 30 plus years is like, you know, women have become more career minded, which necessarily takes them out of the house more. And men have been able to step back from their careers because of that. They don't have to be sole breadwinners. And so now they can be better fathers. And that's the tension there, right? Like the home versus work life and the fulfillment in both. And I think this movie kind of gets there in a roundabout way to talking about that stuff without ever like, aside from that one speech from Laura Dern, without ever actually like going there. And to the point where that monologue she has about that almost felt like out of place, like angrier than the rest of this movie, more resentful than the rest of this movie, because the rest of this movie to me feels very like understanding and, like I said, sort of level headed. And then that kind of anger like pokes through and I'm surprised by it. Maybe that's why she won the Academy Award for it.
Yeah, and it's also it could be the idea that like women tend to be so passive in these relationships that like Laura Dern has to be angry for their behalf for them to be like, yeah, fuck, right. I'm getting fucked here. Maybe there's a little bit of that too.
I mean, that's been the path out of, you know, the women are just staying at home taking care of the kids. That's been the path out is a lot of anger, right? Like, because a lot of women don't fucking want that. So,
right, standing up and said they're tired of this shit and not having any more. Sure.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun fan favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
The other thing is, I thought it was interesting that, like, after the end, when Charlie decided to, you know, take one of those still pretty lucrative and prestigious jobs on the West Coast, to be more part. And as she, you know, you're talking about the, like, you know, good dads invented 30 years ago. And as she becomes more of like the busy professional woman, because she's directed an episode of her own, she won some awards, she's getting more involved in that creative side, said, I can see why you got so wrapped up. Well, she's now gives like, hey, I don't got, you know, I got to do something. Do you want just volunteering to give him time? And that's, you know, that's I think the long game that Alan Alda was advocating for. It's like, you know what, you're probably not going to be able to be. It's impossible at this point to get everything you want. So what's the most important thing? And then chase that. If it's the career, then let your wife move out here with her son. They'll have him. You can, you know, have him over a couple of weeks in the summer and take him to Coney Island and, you know, take him. You go out here every couple, and then do that. But if it's being a dad, then get your ass out here and be a dad. Yeah. And he chose that path and it's working. Mm-hmm. So I thought I talked about at the beginning about this thing being really bougie, and that's the other group of people I saw not liking this film, because I'm like, I'm aware personally of two people who would very much like to get divorced and can't because of health insurance reasons, childcare credit reasons, and tax reasons.
Jesus.
So they're nominally married, but they're not living together. And like, the idea of having a divorce that's $100,000 where you're fighting over $600,000 MacArthur grants and stuff like that, I think that's alienating to certain like people in the audience that's not their lived experience. And like, you know, it's so easy to get married. But then once you get married for a couple of years, especially if you had kids to the mix, if you're poor, not super easy to get out of. Like, it's weird how regressive things have gotten for people like that. And I just wanted to say, yeah, if you don't like the movie because you saw this, or like the other thing, I think other people that saw it didn't like it, or kids that went through an even worse version where their parents didn't have that moment of sobriety where they're like, fuck, we don't want to do this. We need to call out the dogs. Like, I can see if your divorce didn't look like this for a variety of reasons, it kind of being outrageous to see things portrayed like this, but
I get it if this movie is triggering, but fault. If you just can't sympathize with two people who are so two characters who were so well drawn. Like, I take, yes, I get it. You might not have the money that these people might have. You might not have some of the privilege, but also it's a very relatable story, I think. I think it's...
Oh, yeah.
And like I said, it's not just married people. It's any type of relationship where you connect yourself to one other human. That gets messy. And that's the thing that was so relatable to me. And they do such a good job of making these people sympathetic that the MacArthur stuff, her acting career, all that stuff was just like, oh, well, this is what they do for a living, right? It's like if I got a big bonus from Bald Move or whatever, that was the equivalent of the MacArthur grant here. And I'm no fucking genius. I'm also not a megawatt movie star. I'm not going to have her career. Like, but I get these people. I get what they're going through, right? That's crazy to me that people couldn't sympathize with them.
Yeah, I guess it depends on how much you hate the situation you're in and how much it triggers you to see people making headway with resources you don't have, you know?
Sure, like I said.
They even make that a little... Like the judge, the one time we see him in court, kind of sermonizes on the same lines. Like he's like, you know, my court is full with people with the resources, and they kind of like,
yeah.
You see these like burnt out working class moms and dads waiting for their turn to.
They took the fucking day off work. They're losing pay to do this. Yeah.
Right. Right. Paying these assholes $950 an hour to do the argue about the stupid shit. Like it's in it a little bit, and I just like I saw a couple, and I thought to myself like, oh, this reminds me of. Again, the people that I know, they're kind of like, yeah, I could see that being, a turnoff. Like, it's like, yeah, like the McAllisters and Home Alone are relatable, too. But if you're a homeless kid, you're probably like, you know what? Fuck Kevin and his $1 million north side of Chicago mansion and his trips to fucking Paris for Christmas. Right. Fuck him. You
his
know, like,
alternate.
Yeah, I'm not going
to B plan that is to spend $10,000 to fly his family to fucking Florida or yeah, home or whatever during Christmas.
Or like the actual homeless lady that Kevin meets. And he's kind of like, oh, I've got all this, wealth and privilege. But here's an ornament that I got 2-for-1 at the fucking toy store lady. That'll keep you warm. Yeah, right. if that's the equivalent of you in a divorce, then you would be as mad about with this movie as you want.
Sure.
But yeah, I definitely see what you're saying. And like I said, I found it extremely relatable. And that's like, yeah, I just like, but I didn't feel like really angsty about it because I felt like I'm pretty well along on the Adam Driver side of like, you know, being fight, you know, keeping up the good fight. So, because, you know, it's always going to be a fight for your kids, whether you're divorced or not. So,
yep.
I liked it. I thought it was pretty fair and even handed. And I had a lot of fun this morning reading reviews of people. And I'm like, I wonder what your damage was that you thought that this was a place where they thought this person was being magnified or the other. Or I wonder, you know, what you got going on in the old closet that's causing you to think that this person was this fucking crazy ass evil character. Because I thought it was remarkably like pretty straight down the middle.
Yeah, I tilt slightly toward Scarlett Johansson's side of the equation here. I think Adam Driver is a little bit selfish in this movie, but
certainly. In a way that would be entirely understandable for him to be in that position.
Right.
Like,
which is why I don't think he's an asshole.
Self-made,
I think he's
boy
just
yeah. You just
a little blind,
you know,
to her position. Inconsiderate.
You had a check at the midpoint of your life about what is the most important thing in the world, and you got to, like a lot of people don't, actually decide whether it was going to be an act in that best interest. You know,
I almost wish they hadn't made him cheat on her. I forgot about that, and that tilts. It tilts it significantly in ScarJo's favor. I wish they had taken that out because it didn't need it. This movie would have been even better without that plot line.
I was about to, because that's the last thing I wanted to talk about. The fact that I thought that was superfluous, that it didn't, you know, it did change how I think, but in a way that like it was already like, especially I think I felt pretty strongly about it one way or another before we got to that. But like, like, why does this have to be about cheating? It's stronger if it's just about people that no one did anything 100%. Wrong.
Yep.
It's just you just didn't really step back and think about your life and where you're at and whether it's working for everybody and how many sacrifices you've asked someone to make. And You know, it's like I could articulate this was actually good for Charlie, because mm-hmm. if he kept on doing, I think he would have a cold, distant relationship with his son, or was it a risk for that? And now he can, you know, pull that out. And I know that, like, you know, you got the letter about Scarlett saying he really enjoys the dad stuff. But like, again, that's her being charitable. And you think about what Charlie was saying about how often that his dad wasn't around and let him down and missed and was at these awards and late at night. Mm-hmm. He wasn't pulling his weight. And, you know, kids eventually, they will figure out where their pecking order is and your passions and your priorities.
Yeah.
By the time they're 20, 30, however long it takes them to figure out. And then, you know, there's ungrateful children for sure, but there's also absentee fathers and mothers. So.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, did you have anything else that you wanted to talk about? Because that's a good one. I'm glad you brought that up.
No, I don't think so.
You mentioned that this Laura Dern won an Academy Award. Was there any other nominations?
Yeah, there were a bunch. There were 6 nominations. Laura Dern won for supporting role, best actress in a supporting role. This lost best picture to Parasite that year. Also won best original screenplay, or lost best original screenplay to Parasite. Best actor, which, god damn, it's a fucking shame. Adam Driver's gonna win an Academy Award sometime, right?
It just because, like, Adam Driver could be a guy who decides to buy a 400-acre ranch in Montana next to Harrison Ford tomorrow and never act again.
You think
but
so?
If he continues to work, he's got such a great mix of like populist stuff and like art house things. I just can't imagine he won't. And he's also just a fucking magnetic actor.
Mm-hmm. I was surprised when I was watching him that he can sing. Like, I don't think he's the world's best singer, but he didn't embarrass himself in that scene. And I was pleasantly surprised by that, because he's got a monotone affect, certainly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's going to win a fucking Academy Award. He didn't win it for this, which I'm torn, because Joaquin Phoenix won it for Joker. I'm like, okay, that's a really good performance. It's also, you know, more extravagant.
Yeah.
It's more out there, right?
Yeah, it's definitely,
I don't think
it's
as powerful as this. I think what Adam Driver put on the screen in that scene where they blow up at each other was some next level shit. And Joaquin Phoenix is helped by the makeup, but
for sure,
he's also incredible. I don't want to take anything away from him.
He did a lot of physical performance, like that shit he was doing with his like backbone and spine and shoulder blades. And, you know, that's its own kind of emotional whirlwind of an argument with Scarlett Johansson.
Sure. Sure. And then the best original score also lost to the Joker. And Scarlett,
I have
Joe,
no idea what music was in this.
I don't
other
either.
Than the things times they sang. So like that seemed like a pity Oscar or a pat Oscar, but whatever.
Almost, yeah.
Weak year for soundtracks that year.
ScarJo lost to Renee Zellweger in Judy, which I haven't seen. But I will say it's a travesty because I don't like Renee Zellweger that much.
Yeah, Cecily tried to get me to watch that one this weekend. She's like, oh, Renee Zellweger. And I'm like, playing Judy Garland. I'm like, I should be interested in that because of all my show tunes love and stuff. But that's like a little too adjacent for me. There's no, I don't know. Maybe there's a lot of singing and dancing. But
it's a shame.
This didn't interest me.
Because ScarJo has only been nominated twice for Jojo Rabbit and Marriage Story. She won neither.
It's funny because I thought, like, I almost compared her performance to Jojo, because I obviously that's a little bit more visceral material. But she doesn't have a lot of range in that story.
Yeah. Oh, she's so much better in this. She's so much better in this.
Yeah, she's just allowed to do a lot more. Now, that's an interesting question. Do you think Scarlett Johansson will win an Oscar?
I don't know.
Things that,
probably. I mean, she's a great actress, and I feel like you know, as her being like the bombshell sort of movies fade, she'll get into more meaty, substantial roles. I mean, I think she's done great work already. Like Don John, she wasn't going to win anything for that, but she's outstanding in that, playing totally, I don't know, New Jersey, the Jersey Shore. She's essentially the Jersey Shore, and she plays it to a T. But yeah, I thought she was incredible in this, and I think she will win it eventually. Both of them will probably win.
Huh? We'll see. This thing is like, the thing at Oscars is like, there's not that many fucking chances to win one.
Yeah.
It's like, it's insane to see, think of like Meryl Streep getting 20 plus nominations and three wins. Like, it's crazy, her run of dominance, you know?
Yeah, the stuff that has come together. You got to find the script. You got to get a good enough director to make that film great and everybody involved. Then you got to get in the right year where there isn't somebody else crushing it.
There's two slots. Yeah, there's two slots a year. And there's a window of people's career. I mean, some people can keep that window open forever, but like...
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Because that's the thing she says, like, oh, yeah, she's transitions out of her bombshell phase of a year. And I'm like, I hate to tell you, but women in Hollywood that transition out of the bombshell, sometimes they don't find it as easy to keep steady work. You know,
no, I think she's doing it.
There's
though.
Only so many.
I think this movie here is like evidence that she will do it really well, because they don't play up like, I mean, they do play up how good looking she is, but not in the ways that she has in previous movies.
Gotcha. Well, that's our thoughts on Marriage Story. I hope you enjoyed it. We certainly enjoyed watching it. Like, I was a little nervous because it's like one of those things where, like, when I got into it and started realizing this is going to be about a bitter divorce, I'm like, am I ready for this? But it wasn't like, I don't know. Like, I was reading a lot of reviews, some people saying it like really kind of like devastated them for the night. But I guess it depends on where you're at personally with your relationships and your regrets and stuff, how hard it hits you. So,
for sure. Yeah.
I'm of the way of thinking that divorces are expensive because they're fucking worth it. So I'm happily on the 12 year side of one. So I took it all in stride. Yeah. Hope you guys enjoyed the review and the movie. If you chose to watch it, we'll see you on another prestige film or series coming very soon. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Bye, everybody.